So we are studying this first part of the Sri Ishopanishad. Today we'll complete that part with verses 2 and 3. Anyone can tell me what was the relationship between mantra 1 and the invocation? Okay. The first verse stated that there is a source that emanates. Everything emanates from one source, right? Which is a source which is never finishing, right? And so many things emanate, and we heard of what emanated. There was the Paramatma, the Brahman emanating from the source, and then there were the energies emanating from the source. And we saw that everything is one. It's actually all one. It's part of one whole, which we call the absolute truth. Because sometimes when we talk of God, the idea that people have of God is somebody who's behind the clouds and who is, you know, he's hiding in the clouds, and we can ask him for things, and maybe he will protect us. This is the idea of God, but the absolute truth is a much broader idea. It's the whole, the complete whole. Yes, there is a person behind, and that's the ultimate, and that person has so many emanations of different kinds. And when we take the complete picture, that's called the absolute truth, including the Lord, his emanations, both personal and impersonal, and his energies, material and spiritual. So we studied that. And because everything comes from that Bhagavan, that ultimate person, therefore, in Mantra 1 it says, therefore, everything belongs to him. He keeps control and everything belongs to him. So we said this mantra 1 had three features. We remember the three features. Ishavasya. So Ishavasya is the first feature. I mean, this Ishavasya has three different features. So what is the first feature? That's what we stated, that he controls and owns everything. What is the second feature? We are only secondary owners. The jivas, who are also conscious entities like the Lord, but because they emanate from him, they don't have the same exact right as he has. We are secondary owners as well as secondary enjoyers. It's not that we are not enjoyers, we are also enjoyers. Okay, and in what way are we enjoyers? Yeah, the controller of this body. Just try. It's in care of us. It's not in our control, it's in our care. If we care properly, he will control nicely. Yeah? Okay, so we are only secondary owners, secondary enjoyers. And what was the other idea? We have a quota. Whereas the Lord owns everything and enjoys everything, we have a little quota. Because we are a part, so we have a quota. So we could understand our quota in different ways. Whatever the Lord has given us, that's our quota. We have a body, we have a subtle body, we belong to a certain family which gives us certain wealth. Access to wealth or no wealth. So this is our quota. But what did we hear exactly? What is the quota of the human beings? Devotional service, or more exactly, it is, but more exactly it means our quota is to okay, yes. And what is it that we enjoy? What's our quota for enjoyment?
Preeminence.
The remnants, yes, this is our quota. The prasad, that's our quota. So we are meant, our quota, I mean, it can be, this is all part of a same understanding, that human, for each species, there is a quota in food, in the space where the living being is, entity is supposed to live, and so on. The cow, food quota is grass. The tiger's food quota is meat. So for human beings, there is more than that. There is not only that quota of food and space. There is, because we have a higher intelligence, our quota is to recognize the Lord. Our quota is to realize Him. Right? And the process is devotional service. And our actual quota in terms of what we can enjoy, it's prasad. It's the remnants of what He gives us. We are meant to understand that He is the owner, therefore whatever we get, whatever we have, should be put in His service. Our body, our mind, our intelligence, our wealth, our property, everything should be put in His service. And after He enjoys, we enjoy. So this was the principle. And then there was some additional line, the third aspect of this. Yes? Ma agrida kasya svidhavanam. So what was that?
We should not take whatever is for another property.
It's a warning. That listen, this is the point. That you are only the secondary enjoyer and you have a quota. And if you don't respect that quota, you can expect some reaction. Because it's forbidden to deny the supremacy of the Lord. It's forbidden in the sense that it just does not function. It breaks the universal harmony. Just like Prabhupada will explain us, I think, somewhere further in Mantra 7. Just like in a family. In a family, there is always a prominent person who is the head of the family. And as long as everybody agrees with the head of the family, everyone enjoys very nicely. But if you don't agree with the head of a family, then you start getting in trouble. You have to move out and work on your own. You have no more place to stay because you don't agree. So it breaks the harmony. So ma agrida kasya svidhanam. Whenever we see something, we should remember, whose is it? It belongs to Krishna. And as well, it is in care of somebody. If it is in my care, then I can use. And if it is in others' care, then I must take permission. Otherwise, I am a thief. Yes? You will study that in the Nectar of Instruction. What to do with the 100 rupee bill on the floor? I had a friend when I was a student. He had a karma like this that he would always find money. It was, we never had this kind of experience, but he would always find money. A bill here, there. Oh, a bill. You would always find money. So Prabhupada explains that you should return whatever you find. It's not like you can just take it. You should try to figure who is the owner. And yes, you can use it in Krishna's service. But you have to make sure that the owner is not there. Like usually you take it to lost and found. You know, and you let the persons come and figure out, you know, they will ask, did you find my mobile? And you say, oh, excuse me, Prabhu, I put it in Krishna's service, I gave it to the pujari. So before we use things that we find, we should ascertain that the owner is not searching for it, that it's not just, you know, half-lying idol. Once we have ascertained that the thing is completely without any caretaker, then we can donate it to Krishna, we can do something, put it in Krishna's service. And yesterday I was, because this is Maghrida, this is a warning from the Vedic Shastras, you know, and I was telling you yesterday my experience of leaving the body and seeing all my past and seeing all the things that I have done wrong without acknowledging. So we have to be careful not to misuse and not to misuse our own things and not to encroach other people's. Sorry? Well, I was very surprised, but what was pointing out to me was what I had done wrong. Maybe, I mean, that's what was meant to be pointed to me at that point, to make me understand the seriousness of karma and of the law of karma. I was not seeing anything good. In fact, after seeing all these things, there was some devotees taking care of me, and I remember telling them, I'm not a good person. And I was just, because they didn't know what I was going on internally. So one of my godbrothers, he was saying, but no, Mother Prashanta, you're a very nice devotee. And I was saying, no. I was experiencing, you know, because I had had this vision, I could no longer see at all that I am anything good. I'd seen all the mistakes, which I could understand because I had read Prabhupada's books, that it was karma, things that I did, which were, and this started from the beginning of life, before I knew anything about ISKCON, all the memories. So therefore I was under karma, and it was quite frightening to see. But fortunately you will study in the Nectar of Devotion that after coming to Krishna consciousness, taking initiation, chanting, following the process of devotional service, all the karma burns. It's burning. Sometimes it feels like it's burning. So it's burning. Okay, let us sing here and move on to the next. So please remember all these things. I always do a review before the next lesson so that things sink very nicely. Remember also the application that Srila Prabhupada gave of the Ishavasya principle for peace in the world and proper government. We studied different kinds of governments, right? Which all make one mistake. What is their mistake? All the systems of government, what is their mistake? Right, wrong proprietorship. They attribute the proprietorship to the wrong place, either to a person or to the people or to the community or to nobody. And they all have their different ideas, but it's the wrong idea. The Vedas state the right idea. The Lord is the owner, and therefore he is the ruler. And only a king who is in the service attitude, he can rule. Others have the wrong idea, and therefore there is chaos. And chaos we see in the world, the pollution and the madness. Number one sickness in the world is mental disease, mental disorder, and all kinds of physical diseases as well, which come from breaking the laws of nature. So let us sing this first section and move into the next verse. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Ishavasyamidam Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatam Jagat Tena Chaktena Bhundhita Magridhakasya Svidhanam Kurvanne Veha Karmani Jijivishechatam Samaha Evam Tvai Nyanyate Tosti Na Karma Lipyate Nare Asurya Namate Loka
andhena tamasa vritaha tamste pretya vigacchanti ye kechatmano janaha.
So mantra 2, kurvan, which means doing, continuously doing, eva, thus, iha, during this span of life. Iha usually means in this world. Karmani, our work. Kurvan eveha karmani jijivishe chatam samaha. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. Which way? According, you understand the connection, according to Ishavasya. He has stated the principle. One who works according to this principle, he can aspire, he can hope to live for hundreds of years. Or 100 years in Kali Yuga. For, why is that? For that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. Na karma lipyate nare. So there are also three parts in this verse to understand. The first two lines, how by working in this way one can aspire to live for hundreds of years. And then na karma lipyate nare, there is that kind of work will not bind him to the law of karma. And then evam tvayi nanyate tosti, again the statement, very harsh statement of the Shruti. There is no alternative to this way for man. So those discussion here, you know. We can argue, we can speculate, we can do, but this is from our side. This is our illusion. This is our cloud of illusion. But the reality is different. The reality is completely, unbreakable. There is no other way. It's a law. If we work knowing that Krishna is the owner and acknowledge his proprietorship, put things in his service, then we will have a successful life. And there is no other way means you should not select another way. If you select another way, then mantra 3. In mantra 3, we will understand what happens if you don't work in this way. And it will be heavy also. If we don't work in this way, it will be a little difficult. So, in this verse, we understand this is the law of karma, which is stated very strongly, which is called the law of karma bandhana. Karma bandhana, Prabhupada said, bondage by work. Bondage by work. So Prabhupada begins he has quite a few statements, interesting statements in his purport. The first one is, no one wants to die. Everyone wants to live as long as he can drag on. So you see the old people or the sick people, you know, you ask them, how are you? They say, fine. But, you know, they can't see, they can't walk properly, they have no teeth. They are suffering like anything, but they are happy for one thing only. What's the thing they are happy about? They're alive. No matter the condition, there is one important thing, is I am alive. Very, very dear to me is what? Life. Why is that so dear? Because, yes, Prabhupada explains, the nature of the soul is sat. We are eternal. We are eternal and we resent death. Death is unnatural. We cannot understand why it's there. It's not normal because our intrinsic knowledge tells us that I am eternal. What is this thing? Why? And also, I am ever blissful. What is this pain? We don't like pain because our original nature is bliss. And we don't like the end of anything, whether it's the end of life, the end of a relationship, or the end of a period of our life, any end, we don't like it in general, except the end of suffering, that we like. So Prabhupada explains that, you know, in its original transcendental state, the jiva is alive, is simply alive. Life comes from life, Prabhupada taught us. So, but once we incarnate in the material body, there's a problem. The body has a tendency to die. It has a tendency to dysfunction. And we spend all our life energy just trying to stay alive. Right. What is this trying to stay alive? Prabhupada called it in his books the struggle for existence. What is the first struggle every day? What is to be done with this body? Huh? Feed. You have to feed. Every day something has to come in so that there is energy for the body to function, and if you stop putting things in, it dies. So this is the bondage. We are bound to eat. We are bound to maintain this body. We said it's self-maintained, but this is Krishna's arrangement. It self-maintains by the means of your own work. So you work and work and work, and you maintain the body. But there is a thing, is that as we said in the introduction, Krishna has given a manual how to use this body. And if we follow the manual of the Vedas, then Ishavasyamidam Sarvam and everything, then it goes okay. But if we don't follow the laws of the Vedas, which basically help us go about the laws of nature in a way which is harmonious and which will not harm us, then there is karma bandhana, bondage by work. We will be bound. Whatever we do to maintain this body is going to create reactions, either good or bad. And reaction means that in order to get that the reactions are produced by the body, karma is done through the body, so the reactions will come to the body. And in this way, we have to take birth again and again and again and again. Why do we take birth again? When we have desires to fulfill, we want some things in this world. And second, we have created reactions, and these reactions are yet to come. And whatever we do, the reactions do not come immediately. Sometimes 50% immediate, 20% after 1 year, 5% after 3 lives, and the rest after 100 lives. That's why people ask that question always, why do bad things happen to good people? Because the karma is stretched over a period of time. We explain how the 24 elements, it's all dealing with matter. We pressed something, we banged somebody's, we hit somebody's face, and it involves the physical elements. And the physical elements, they move by which force? Time. By the force of time. So we pushed the elements in one direction. And now they are going, that's going to create waves of reactions. But these waves of reactions, they are going to come to us according to time. And the laws of karma are very, very intricate. Only Krishna understands them. He knows past, present, and future. But we do not. And we cannot understand how the reactions will come to us. But our life as a conditioned soul is made up of reactions. Whatever comes to us in this life is the result of our reactions. It's all the reactions are coming. And we are free to react to those reactions and change them in some ways, you know. At least not continue to further implicate ourselves in the laws of karma. But this takes knowledge. Somebody comes and punches us in the nose. What is our immediate reaction? Punch back! You hit me, I hit you. This is the first reaction. But the person who is intelligent understand where did it come from, this punching in my nose? Yeah, right. Yeah. I had done nothing to that person in this life. Suddenly he came out of the crowd and punched my nose. I should understand that it's a reaction from some past activities in some previous lives. And if I just take it and say, okay, that's it, the circle is finished, I punched in this way, it went round and came back to me that way, it was my own hand, in fact. And if I say, okay, I accept it, thank you very much, please, I'm sorry, I'm very sorry that I ever punched anybody in the nose, now I know how it feels, and I will not do it again. And I stop here. I understand. One circle of karma is over. But if I hit back, then I start a new circle. And I will be hit again in the future. So these are the laws of karma. Action, reaction. And this is based on the fact that the living entity is responsible in the human life. We said that animals don't create any karma. They are not responsible. They work strictly under the laws of nature. Whereas man is given the freedom to work under the laws of nature or not. We have the freedom. For example, in the evening, all the cows here, as soon as the light goes down, they fall asleep. But we invented electricity. We can stay up all night. We have invented for ourselves a million things we can do in the night. We can watch films for the whole night. We can write the whole night. We can do any nonsense the whole night. But animals don't do that. They are bound by the laws of nature. And because they sleep at regular time and this and that, you know, there is no reaction for them. But for us, we developed insomnia, we developed mental disorders, we developed low eyesight for working in the night, and so on. So we are free. We are so intelligent. Instead of eating from the ground like the dog, we have invented the table, the kitchen, the pots, the spoons, the spices. But in fact, we are doing the same thing.
You mentioned some words that we get 30% of the 1 year, but is that a from one specific?
No, it is not fixed. It's just an example. It's very intricate laws and you don't know. Because if you understand the laws of karma, by trying to figure the laws of karma, we can understand the greatness of God, which is presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. That the karma is, our karma is mixed with the karmas of everybody. Like now we are all together in this room, so we are all related. Right? We are all related in some way. So we create actions, reactions, action, reaction, action, reaction. And then Krishna has to manage who is going to get which reaction through whom, when. And he has to manage an unlimited number of jivas over an unlimited amount of time. Almost unlimited. Huh? There is the whole duration of the universe, and there are so many jivas, and they all have karmas, and there the karma of one person is connected to the karma of another 2 million, 3 million, 4 million people. And when everything is going to come back and interact for this, for that, this is Krishna's brain. Brahma, actually, but it's Krishna, it's the Paramatma who is in, above all these karmic things, you know. Yes? Bhakti, not exactly bhakti, but ishavasya. What is indicated as intelligence in the scriptures, real intelligence is what is said in Ishopanishad, is when he is enlightened with knowledge, he recognizes isha and ishavasya. Once he recognizes this, he lives according to the principle, then he has no reactions. But as far as just being in the mode of goodness, it's not sufficient. Like someone in the mode of goodness understands that it should be vegetarian because, you know, it's not good to... We take reactions from killing animals and all, but you also take reactions from killing plants. You have to be fruitarian, then you eat only fruit. You know, you cannot. That's why in the Vedic Shastra there is the Pancha Ashunu, the Pancha Yagya, because, okay, maybe you don't eat anything, just fruit, but what about breathing all the bacteria? What about killing ants on the way to the Goshala or on the way here and there? What about when you cut your fruit, you use a knife and you cut somebody in between, you know, that was in the fruit? You cannot avoid karma. So this is where we studied last year in Bhagavad Gita, that there is, this is the difference between the impersonal path and the personal path. That the impersonalists, they are in the mode of goodness. They understood the laws of karma. And how they are trying to get rid of karma? By doing nothing. And this is not possible. Right? Yes. So rather... The law is given in the Ishopanishad that you recognize the Lord and you take up the process of sacrifice. Then you are free. If you sacrifice, then you are free.
The second question is that even in bhakti, sometimes it is mentioned, like, only your nama or chanting, will be free from sinful reactions.
Yeah. The eradication of sinful reactions is progressive. So as soon as we take up bhakti, we begin eradicating. Even at karma yoga, you begin eradicating. At least you don't create any more reactions in karma yoga. And in bhakti, you burn the reactions. From the very beginning, with whatever level of bhakti, you start eliminating the reactions. But it is progressive. The purer our bhakti, the more intense the fire that destroys the reactions. So in the beginning we destroy certain things and then we go more and more subtle, more and more subtle, more and more subtle. So definitely the real eradication of sinful reactions, like complete eradication of sinful reaction, it comes when we pass nishta. When we come to nishta, then we are no more subject to the sinful reactions. But there are other anarthas that are still there, other things that continue. So the eradication continues up to the stage of bhava.
Okay.
We know that. Different types of anarthas. But as far as sinful reactions, it starts from the beginning. Klesha Gni, Shubhada, Moksha. You remember? Klesha Gni. The destruction of sinful reaction begins with sadhana bhakti. And there, it's progressively erased, eradicated. Yes? If we do some wrong things in bhakti, you mean?
That is the same life. If why won't we get everything back to us?
In the same life?
Yeah.
That you can ask the Paramatma. He set it up in that way that it comes over many lifetimes, the reactions.
Yeah,
I think it's a question of universal management, you know. Yeah.
They have done wrong and they don't know either themselves. They ask questions, why not happened that time when I did wrong thing?
Yeah.
But now things are coming back.
Yes. So that's the way it is set up. It doesn't always come. Like in the Nectar of Devotion, the example is given of the thief. The thief steals, he's not caught. He steals and he's not caught. So, but in the next life, he doesn't steal, but he's caught. Yeah. I think this is something which, in one sense, is favorable for Brahma Jigyasa, because the person who suffers without cause, he really thinks why. He starts thinking why, and that is good. That's a good point. Yeah, very intelligent point she's making, Amrita Kelly, that we create karma up to the point of death. So suppose you kill somebody 5 minutes before your death, you don't have time to get the reaction.
And you can put other way that like if you have two murder and you have only one life, how will you get everything back? So people say that.
Yeah, this is actually, you see, this is the wealth of the Vedic knowledge. And the fact, this is what makes the Vedic philosophy so much superior. Because in Christianity, for example, as well as in Islam, they believe in only one life. You see? And that's how, you know, those who are very inquisitive, they have a difficulty putting up with it. Because for a Christian, where is the cause of all? Some people are rich, some people are beautiful, some people are poor, ugly, and suffering all their life. So what is, where from? Where is the justice of God? Because then they say God is just. In which way? There is no logical explanation, you know. But by the Vedic understanding, you know, knowing that the system works over many lifetimes, then you can adjust, you know, why some people are rich, why some people are poor, and so on. Why sometimes we don't get caught and this and that. Like Prabhupada gave an example that, and we don't get the reaction. Prabhupada gives an example. There's in a house, there are the people of the house, they are praying, oh my Lord, before they go to bed, oh my Lord, please protect us from thieves and burglars and everything during our sleep. So Krishna has to protect them because they ask. And then there's a thief outside waiting until they switch off the light, and he's also a bhakta, and he says, oh my Lord, please make everything successful, put them asleep very nicely so I can steal everything. So Krishna has a big task. He has to adjust. Both have made a request. And he has to adjust how these ones are going to be protected and this one is going to be successful. You know, he has a job. That's why he's God. So it's a very intricate thing, the law of karma. And the only thing we should know is that we should not fall under karma. We should avoid it because it's a machine. You put your little finger there and, you know, it eats up all your arm, your body, everything, you're done. So we have to be very careful to actually work under Krishna's authority. So let us go a little further in this one here. So we desire happiness and we desire eternal life. And for this, the person who is actually unaware, who is not awakened to the Ishavasya principle, he struggles for life. He struggles for existence. So Prabhupada explains here what we were talking about yesterday, that there are three types of karmas: karma, akarma, and vikarma. So you should know these things. This will come in the show and it will come in Bhagavad Gita. Actions that are performed in terms of one's prescribed duties are mentioned in the revealed scriptures are called karma. So we should understand when Prabhupada talks of revealed literatures, usually it means the Vedas. And we should act according to the Vedas. This is for those who are under, you know, generally under the Vedic understanding. Now, those who follow the principles, for example, of Christianity, it's a little different because it's a system of sat dharma, like bhakti, you know. And there are 10 commandments, for example. And if they follow the 10 commandments and they worship their, you know, the persons who have revealed that path, they are okay. They are protected. And those who follow the Vedic line, they should follow the laws of Varna and Ashram. So the problem in this, with this, is that Prabhupada explains it's a very gradual path. It's a very, very gradual path of purification. And the problem in this age is that these scriptures are hardly available, and this way of life is obsolete. Obsolete, right? It's very difficult. Because first of all, Varnashram is based on agrarian economy. And this agrarian economy right now is not in place. Very less. When we talk of agrarian economy, we mean individuals, couples, farmers who cultivate the land in self-sufficiency. So this doesn't exist much except in remote areas in this age. So if you don't have that base of agrarian economy, if you don't have the cow, you don't have the milk, you don't have the ghee, and then so many other things are there. These things create a mode of goodness. From the environment in the mode of goodness, the Brahmins can grow. And once you have no Brahmins, then you have no yagyas, you have no mantras, you have nothing. And the scriptures on the basis of which the Varnashram Dharma is meant to be followed do not exist anymore really much. It has been burnt. It has been burnt by 700 years of Muslim invasion, followed by 200 years of British invasion. And now more invasion coming. So, this is Prabhupada stating here, in this purport, you will find two things. Prabhupada defines the Ishavasya principle followed in terms of the Vedic marg, and which is the initial lower stage of following Ishavasya. And then the higher stage of following Ishavasya, that is bhakti. So here Prabhupada explains that karma and vikarma, they are binding, both of them. So even though people follow, vikarma means one does not follow the scriptures, neither the Christian scriptures, nor the Quran, nor specifically the Vedic literatures. One who does not follow that, he does bad work. The result of, and it is karma bandhana, there is bondage, and the bondage is in this way that that person will suffer. The reaction for sinful activities is suffering. So one who understands that he doesn't want to suffer, then he begins following his activities, he begins working according to the scriptures, but still for himself. So that is called karma. sinful action is called vikarma, and pious action is called karma. Punya. Punya is called in Sanskrit. Punya karma. But this is not, this is also karma bandhana. There is negative karma bandhana and there is positive karma bandhana. That's why Srila Prabhupada explains that those who are intelligent, they understand that both vikarma and akarma are equally binding. One who does pious activities such as giving charity to the proper persons, helping others, planting trees, making all kind, planting gardens and so on. So these kind of people in the next life, they progress materially. But they have to take birth again in order to enjoy the fruit of their piety. Huh? In India, everybody is very, very anxious, very eager to give dan. Why? Because in next life, it will come back. And they don't go further than that. They know the law of karma, so they give in charity in order in next life to get money, right? In some people, they take birth wealthy because in one life they just gave, and according to who you give, what time, in which circumstances, in which mind, you will get the same amount, double amount, 1,000 times the amount. They know. It's written in the Shastra, in the Vedas. That's how to get rich. In Western countries, people think that you get rich by speculation. You get rich by speculating on the money market. You get rich by working like a donkey. This is how you get rich. Or by stealing. But the intelligent, I mean half-intelligent people who know the Vedas, they know that you don't have to do that. Whatever you have in this life, you just donate it. Next life, of course you have to be a little patient. You have to believe in the next life. Huh? So this is the path of progressing awakening of the soul. Huh? By karma, those who follow karma, usually who follow vikarma, they don't believe in the next life. If they knew that they will get the reactions in the next life, they'll be scared. But they are fearless because they don't believe in the soul. So the karmis, they understand when they read the Vedic Shastra that in the next life they will get the good reactions. So they start developing knowledge of the soul. And one who comes to the level of understanding the soul, then he starts doing akarma. He understands the meaning of akarma. That if I am a soul and I take birth again and again, and even if I do good, still I will have to suffer death again and again. Then he asks the question, isn't there a way to get out of death? Where is immortal life? And when he begins inquiring about immortal life, then the Upanishads tell him, Isha Vasyamidam Sarvam. They tell him, this is how you work. If you work like this, you can live 100 years and you don't have to take birth again. So, Prabhupada explains that we should, ordinary men wish to perform good work in order to be recognized and achieve some higher status of life in this world or in heaven. But intelligent men well know that both good and bad work equally bind one to the material miseries. That work which will free them from the reactions of both good and bad work is seeked by them. They try to find that kind of work. So then Prabhupada explains that there are two ways to have this akarma. The stage of akarma is also called neshkarmya. Action without reactions. It means without material reactions, neither good nor bad. This is called akarma or neshkarmya. So there are two ways. One is by executing the prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedic literature. So this is the path of karma and gradually graduating to karma yoga. And in this way, this path of the Vedic progressive marg allows the humans to regulate their working energy in such a way that they can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. Because we have so many attachments. Prabhupada says, in the lower stage of life, one cannot immediately adopt the activities of devotional service. Why? Because the nature of the conditioned soul, the reason why we are in this world is that we are selfish. We are self-centered, very egoistic. And Srila Prabhupada says that we are into sense gratification. It means we want everything. We all want to enjoy. We consider ourselves the center. And we want to create enjoyment by bringing everything towards us and enjoying that. And we are so much conditioned in that that it's very difficult for us, because devotional service means complete abnegation of this selfishness and working for Krishna. So you can't jump from Vikarma in general. You can't jump, but in Kali Yuga you can. In Kali Yuga, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has given us the holy name, we can jump from Vikarma to devotional service. But naturally, it's not like that. You cannot just jump from a complete selfish state to a total selfless state. It's going to be going in gradually. So this is what following the Vedic scriptures does. It transforms the consciousness. The idea of vikarma, karma, and then akarma is a transformation of the consciousness from most selfish to completely selfless, and finally Krishna-centered. So there is a movement which takes place, and Prabhupada explains in the purport that initially a person has what is called personal sense gratification. He's very selfish. He knows only himself. Right? He's completely overwhelmed with passion and ignorance and works. He doesn't even care for his own kids. He knows only himself. And that's why he abandons his wife, he abandons his kids, he kills his father for money. This is Vikarma. He knows only himself. And one who gradually graduates to goodness, then he goes from the sense of I to the sense of we. We. And he develops an extended ego. There is simple ego. Who is me? Me is just what I see here. That's it. But one in goodness, a little bit more in goodness, extends the ego. Me means me, my wife, my husband, my children, my family, my community, my country, my citizens, my all the humans, we humans, we living entities, we. Right? But it's still self-centered in the sense that it is still based on the bodily concept of life. I say we when I speak to my family, but I don't say we when I speak about the neighbors. Because the family is related through the body. The nation is related to the body. We were born in the same land. We are we humans, we all have the same body. We living entities, we all live on the same planet. We breathe the same air. So it's all based on the bodily concept of life. So gradually, by following the Ishavasya principle, one will come to the level of knowledge, which means understanding oneself to be the soul. And at that point, when we understand we are the soul, then the next step is we can understand the super soul. And then we can change the center and make Krishna the center. So karma yoga is that practice which brings us from this self-centeredness, it turns us around. So first there is me, then there is we, and then there is a stage of detachment. That is Nishkam Karma Yoga. I don't do it for me. I don't do it for us. But I don't know God as yet. So I don't do it for Him either. I just do it because the Shastra said to do it. I do it out of duty. I do it to give the example. I do it, you know, this is the way things work, like this. And I trust that by doing this, I will get, usually, liberation. So, there is a transformation of the consciousness which takes place. From a lower stage of selfishness to a stage of detachment, and then to devotional service. So Prabhupada says that a conditioned soul is accustomed to working for sense gratification for his own selfish interest, immediate or extended. So people in this world are very proud of the isms, humanitarianism, socialism, and all kinds of isms, because this is communal work. It seems selfless. It seems selfless, but it is not actually selfless because it's based on the bodily concept of life. Srila Prabhupada calls it, he says, there is no harm in becoming a family man or an altruist, a socialist, a communist, a nationalist, or a humanitarian, provided that one executes his activities in relation with Ishavasya, the God-centered conception. So ultimately we have to connect, we have to recognize the Isha, and we have to connect with him. So simply recognizing God and sacrificing a portion of one's things for him out of duty, or even sacrificing all one's income, all one's wealth, just out of duty, this guarantees. What does it guarantee? When we follow Ishavasya and we recognize the authority of the Lord and therefore work according to the law and sacrifice to the Isha, what does this guarantee? Yes? Sorry? Na karma lipyate nare, but more than that? No, no, not exactly that.
Human life is guaranteed.
Human life is guaranteed. Human life is guaranteed. At least there will be human life. You follow these things, at least you will not degrade. You will not degrade in the lower forms of life. Prabhupada explains that the greatest danger of life is the danger of gliding down again into the evolutionary cycle of birth and death. Now, if we come to the complete state of Nishkam Karma Yoga, we may also get liberation. But as we know from the Vaishnava Shastras, liberation is not always the end of the journey. So the way to actually not return for good is to move on to bhakti, which means following Ishavasya plus not just doing it out of duty and doing it for him because he says it, but adding the element of love and personal attention and personal relationship with Krishna. Yes? Yeah.
They don't go
to the ocean. No.
They stay in detachment.
Yes, in detachment. Nishkam. Nishkam. They suppress their desires, or they purify their desires by austerities, by the study of the Upanishads. They purify their desires. But what they do not purify is their ego. Purified ego means dasa. And that they don't, because they don't believe in duality. They believe in oneness. So there is no dasya. So the ego is not fully purified.
You mentioned that there are two ways to attain akarma. One of them was executed, the duties mentioned in the Vedic literature, and what was the other one?
Devotional service. Yeah. Executing the principles of Varnashram, this is the initial stages when we are still too much attached to selfish sense gratification. So we give, okay, little for God, little for me, little good for God, little for me. You sacrifice a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. You follow the rules. But devotional service means complete selflessness, working for Krishna, in love. Bhakti is based, you know, Ishavasya, bhakti is based on Ishavasya, but it's more than Ishavasya. It's the perfection of Ishavasya, we could say. The initial part of Ishavasya is simply karma yoga. And the perfected stage of Ishavasya, that is devotional service. When you completely understood who Krishna was, and you completely understood who you were, the relationship between the two, then you take to bhakti. Yes?
You mentioned that, you know, people give this, they give the charity and then they want something more. There is this natural awakening of the soul, it's a natural process. And Krishna also says that all sacrifices, they should do charity, by the way, to transcendental knowledge. So my question is that even if somebody gives charity,
yes, because he follows the Vedic path. See, Ishavasya means recognize the authority of the Lord. So if one gives in charity, according to the laws of charity given in the Vedas, if he follows just by following, he begins his surrendering, the process of surrender. So he will get the reactions, but his knowledge will also grow. And in the next life, he's still attached to fruitive activity, but his knowledge is more. So by following the Vedas, either in karma or karma yoga, what happens is the knowledge grows. Until the point of realizing oneself as not the body. Then one becomes qualified to actually take up bhakti. Because bhakti is directly between the soul and the Lord. So first you should know you are the soul. Yeah. So just by following the Vedas, automatically in the knowledge, the goodness, following the Vedas means regulation. You don't do things the way you like. You have to regulate. Regulated, to be regulated is a quality of the mode of goodness. See, it's actually a rise from tamas to sattva and then transcendence. So the vikarmis, they are tamasic and rajasic. The karmis, they are mostly rajasic. And because they follow, their tamas goes down. And when there is enough goodness, then they understand, oh, I better work for liberation. They understand, theoretically, there is a soul. There is eternal life. So then they take to karma yoga. And by continuing the regulation and this and that, then the passion is burnt and they come to simple goodness. And when they are in simple goodness, then there is realized knowledge of the soul. Yes. Yeah, the sacrifice of knowledge is higher than the sacrifice of possessions. Yes. So yes, it means that the just sacrificing one's possessions, this is the beginning of the ladder of karma, then the sakam karma yoga. But once you grow in consciousness, then you do other things. You cultivate knowledge. That's higher. You have progressed higher.
And when you sacrifice your ego, that's the best.
And when you sacrifice yourself, your ego, then that's the top. They're very difficult. Okay, so I think we kind of finished this one. Prabhupada is heavy in this thing, in this verse here. He says, a humble, God-centered life is more valuable than a colossal hoax of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism. So remember, one of the themes of the Upanishad is defeating materialism. That's what's happening in this purport here. We are defeating materialism. So in the end, Srila Prabhupada explains very nicely that when altruistic activities are executed in the spirit of Sri Upanishad, they become a form of karma yoga. So usually the, you see, the karmis, first of all, they sacrifice to demigods, and they give charity to any, you know, Brahmins, or they give to the poor also, they give like this. But Ishavasya means that you don't sacrifice to the demigods, you now begin sacrificing to Vishnu. That is karma yoga. Karma yoga means sacrifice to Vishnu. Karma means sacrifice to the demigods, and strictly for fruitive results. And karma yoga means sacrifice to Vishnu. And this kind of thing protects us from gliding down again in the lower species. Srila Prabhupada calls karma yoga half-finished God-centered activities. Half-finished. What is the finished activity? Yeah, service in love to Krishna. That is the finished pakka Ishavasya. But half-finished, that's karma yoga. You just work, you know, but there is no love, there is nothing. So Srila Prabhupada directs us to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu if we want to know more about complete Ishavasya activities. Then these are described in the Nectar of Devotion. That's the science of devotional service. Then in the next verse, we will be warned of what happens if we don't follow. Asuriya namate loka andhena tamasa avritaha tamste pratyabhigacchanti yeke chatmahano janaha. So in this verse we hear about one particular type of person called the Atma Ha. You remember that word? You know that word. Atma Ha. Atma means the soul, the self, and Ha means the killer. So the killer of the soul, whoever he may be, means there are many kinds of them. Ye ke, that's many, many. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, different types. There are big killers of the soul, medium-sized killers of the soul, small-sized killers of the soul. He must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. What are the worlds of the faithless? Asuriya namate loka. These loka are different planets. And what is their name? Their name is Asuriya loka, the name of the asuras. So Prabhupada explains, there are two reactions for vikarma. So this is the reaction for vikarma. If we don't follow at all. So this reaction for vikarma, what is it? Prabhupada explains that either we go to the lower planets where the light of the sun never reaches. Woo! And where you get the beautiful body of a snake or something else. Or what does it mean to go down? One is to go to the lower planets, or what else? Lower species of life. To become a little worm in the stool. There is also a jiva in the worm. When we see worms, we should think, oh, there's a jiva inside. What kind of a trip he's having? No legs, no hands, no eyes. What is he doing all day? Crawling on the ground. So this is a reaction, it's a degradation. It's not a degradation of the soul. It's a degradation of the consciousness. The soul is the same, either in the worm, in the demigod, or in the human. But there is degradation of the consciousness. Degradation of the sense perception. In the human beings, all the senses are awake. But in the lower species, some have only the sense of sight, some have only the sense of taste, some have only the sense of smell. Not all the senses are developed. Their power of expression is not developed. The intelligence practically is completely, almost totally switched off. They are guided by the super soul, but they don't have a brain on their own. So this is the reaction here. Either lower form of life or the lower species. No, animal life, you cannot create karmic reactions, but you suffer karmic reactions. This is what animal life is about. We have done all kinds of nonsense, and we take birth as an animal. And what is the life of an animal? Just observe what they are doing. They live in fear. They hardly have any shelter. They are always in search of food. And then the animal kingdom means it's a system of predation. There's a predator. For each species, there's a predator. So they are eaten, their body is eaten by the higher species. So what kind of life is that? It's a very difficult life. Very, very difficult life. And they die, animals die in very horrible conditions. They fall in the fire, there are so many horrible type of death that they go through. So it's not nice.
So if animal life is not about creating karma.
About?
About creating karma.
Animals do not create karma.
So they just kind of burn their karma?
They burn the karma.
So when we go to the human life, what karma do we have? We burn karma in the...
You have a lot of karma, so whatever is left...
There
is always something left. There's something left. Yes. There's something left. Okay, yes?
So we're talking about degradation of consciousness. So why is it translated?
Okay, good. I was going to ask that question. What does it mean, the killer of the soul? What does it mean? Because we cannot kill the soul, right? The soul is avinashi tu tadvidi. You should know that it is avinasha, it is eternal. You cannot kill the soul. So what does it mean, killer of the soul? Yes? Yes. It actually refers to neglecting. It's those who neglect the human form of life. They are called the killers of the soul. Killer of the soul is also the butcher who actually kills animals. Because Atma in Sanskrit has many meanings. And one meaning of Atma is soul. But Atma also means the mind. And Atma also means the body. In truth, Atma means the self. So according to where we identify, if we identify with the body, then my body is my Atma. If I identify with the mind, then my mind is the Atma, myself. And if I identify with the soul, then the soul is myself. Hmm? Atma means self. So the butchers, they are also called Atmaha. And because they are encroaching upon the karma of others, they go to the lower planets, they go to the lower species. But here, Atmaha actually means, Prabhupada explains that Atmaha is one who neglects. A human being, if he does not fully utilize his life for self-realization, he must be considered Atmaha, the killer of the soul. So Prabhupada explains in this purport that this law of karma is based on the principle of responsibility. In human life, we are responsible for what we do. And there are two kinds of people. There are the suras and there are the asuras. The suras are the ones who follow Ishavasya. The Vishnu Bhaktas, those who recognize some authority, the authority of Shastra, at least that much. So they are called suras. And the suras, actually, there are many kinds of them. Those who simply acknowledge the Vedas and live by the Vedas, they are suras. Those who sacrifice to Vishnu in Karma Yoga, they are suras. And the Krishna Bhaktas, they are also suras. So those who follow Ishavasya, who acknowledge the Lord, they are suras. And the asuras, they are those who do not accept the laws. And here they are the one, they are the Atmaha. The Atmaha are the asuras. That's why they go to Asurya Loka. They are the ones who do not use the facilities that Krishna has given them to serve him, or at least to elevate themselves. Srila Prabhupada compares the human body to a boat. Did you see that analogy? A very famous one. What are the different aspects of the boat? What is the boat? The body. Yes. Is sailing on the sea. What is the sea? The material world. Yes, material life. And what else is there? The boatmen are the scriptures and the acharyas. Those who can direct. Those who know how to direct the boat. We don't know how to direct the boat. We need a captain. So the scriptures and the acharyas, they are the captain. And then there is some wind also. The facilities of the human body. This is the wind. So we have to use the facilities. The acharyas will tell us what to do. And we have to use that. And this will propel us. The very body that we have obtained, which is the result of our karma. And it's a result, it's in fact a bondage. That same body will become the source of our liberation. Favorable breezes. Srila Prabhupada gives us another analogy to show us the difference between humans and animals. Which analogy is that? Yes, Navadip? Okay, the government servant and the ordinary clerk. So the regular communist or socialist or regular ignorant man, what does he always complain? He goes to an office and he sees at the door of the office there is a clerk. So especially in India it is very typical, at least it was, things are changing. But when you would go to any government office, outside the governor's office there would be a clerk, right? And he's sitting there with a table with only 3 feet, you know, a broken chair, and he has a pen that doesn't work, you know, and he's badly dressed, and he's sitting there, very dutiful, usually very dutiful person many times, and he's sitting there, and he somehow has to break little pieces of paper from the newspaper in order to write your name, you know. And then he goes inside, and he gives the boss inside, you know, for your appointment. He gives him your name and all. He comes back and he tells you, yes, you can go in. Then you go inside, and wow, there's an AC room. Before there wasn't AC, there would be somebody with a pankha fanning the big guy. So there is a big AC room, and there is a huge desk, and a wonderful, beautiful seat for the person, and there is a bar with all kinds of drinks, and there is this and that. There are machines. There's another secretary. There's a servant. There's this. There's that. You know, and the guy is dressed paka with a big, tie and all that. And the common man will think, how unfair. How unjust. Look at all the facilities that this guy has. And why the other one outside doesn't have any facility? That would be the question. Yes. So what does the Ishopanishad answer? Yeah, that the facility is according to the responsibility. The highest the risk, we should understand that it's not free. He has very high responsibility. Therefore, he has been given lots of facility. So the animals, they have no responsibility. So their facilities are very less. No intelligence, very less intelligence. But humans have a very high responsibility. They have the responsibility to recognize Krishna and to serve him. They in fact have the responsibility to save themselves and to save the whole world. They can also save the animals. They can feed them prasadam. So, but with the facility comes responsibility. So we have the facility. So usually what the humans want to do, they want the facility, but they don't want the responsibility. So the clerk outside, what is this responsibility? Because he has to sit there and just anybody comes, he can sleep in between because he has nothing to do. And somebody comes, he wakes up, and he just has to knock the door, give the name and come back, let the person in, or say no, not now, and that's it. This is his responsibility. So how much, why does he need AC to do that? Since he sleeps half of the time, he doesn't even know whether it's hot or cold. So he doesn't need the facility because he doesn't have a big job to execute. But the other person inside the room is responsible for the entire city electrical supply. So he has a bigger responsibility. But we must not misuse the facility, the great facility which has been given to us. We should not misuse our human life just to go about the four human propensities. Yesterday I was seeing, or today I was saying that the dog eats from the ground. Human says, ooh, I don't do that. Except for Chaturmasya sometimes. But in general, I don't do that, you know. No, I know I'm evolved. I'm a civilized human. So I built a house, I built a kitchen, I know how to use the fire. In fact, I don't even need fire. Electricity is enough, you know. And I have a plate and I have 3 glasses. I have big spoons, small spoons, fork. I have so many things just to eat. For sleeping, the dog sleeps outside. Not me. I'm evolved. I don't sleep outside. I have a bed room. And a bed. You know, a modern one that you can lift from the back or you can lift from the up with a huge mattress. and I have bed sheets, and I have pillows, I have an alarm clock, I have a pill to go to bed, I have a pill to wake up. So many things are there. Curtains on the window, but what am I doing? I sleep. This is misuse of the facility given to human beings. That's why great sages, they do not invest their time and money and interest in living comfortably. And then defending animals, what do? How do they defend? They have teeth and they have nails. I don't do that. I'm a civilized, pakka human being. What do? I have a gun. I spend minimum 50% of my national budget on defense. I'm civilized. The proof of a civilized country in the world is what? How high is their defense budget?
How high what?
How high is the defense budget? The defense budget. How much they spend in defense, then they are prominent in the world. So this is not. And animals mate. That I also do. Like everything else. I eat, I defend. But animals, they just mate on the street, here in front of everybody. I don't do that. I need a room, I need this, I need that, I need perfume. I need to go to the hairdresser. I need a nice dress, I need pendants, nice jewelry, I need this, I need that, I need so many things. I need nice presentation. I watch cinema to get ideas. I'm evolved. I'm an evolved person. I'm not an animal. But in the end, what do? Same thing. So that is the misuse of the facilities. Yes, you can use your intelligence to improve eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Yes, you can. But that is not what is expected from a human being. So such person, which in the world is acclaimed, rock stars and others, acclaimed in the world, is called here by Srila Prabhupada what? Polished animal. Polished means, you polish your shoes, make them shiny. So such persons are polished animals. They look, they have tie and suit. Prabhupada always gave that example because this is the image of the modern civilized man. Tie and suit. But actually inside it's an animal. Because he's not using the tie and suit to realize Krishna. He's just involved in perfecting the animal propensities. So Prabhupada says we are not given, we are given this human form of life not to work hard like asses, swine and dogs, but to attain the highest perfection of life. If we do not care for self-realization, the laws of nature force us to work very hard, even though we may not want to do so. There was some very heavy statements. There is some heavy statement in this thing here, which says, Prabhupada says on the second page of the purport that Sri Upanishad warns in clear terms that the killer of the soul is destined to enter into the darkest regions of ignorance to suffer perpetually. You know the meaning of that word?
Over and over.
Over and over. Perpetually means? No end. Right? Perpetually means there's no end. Means over and over and over again and with no hope of to end. So this is the language of mostly of the Shruti, This is because these are instructions for people who haven't yet come to realize Krishna, and they need to be shaken. Because otherwise, whereas the Christians believe in eternal damnation, right? Those who know about Christianity, it's either you make it and you are saved or not, you go to hell. And for how long?
Forever.
You go to hell for eternity. Yeah. But that's not the Vedic philosophy. We are always told that because in Bhagavad Gita you have studied the introduction, you know there are five topics in Bhagavad Gita. The Ishvara, the Jiva, the Prakriti, Kala and Karma. Out of these, four are eternal and one is not, karma. So because karma is not eternal, we understand that there will be an end to burning one's karma. There should be an end. But the statement there perpetually, you will find this in the purport in Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as well. In one of the purports, I think it's 9.3 or something like that. That Prabhupada also says, I cast them into lower species of life perpetually. Merciful Krishna. What is the danger? Krishna wants to warn us and make us understand the danger. The danger of gliding down to the lower species. It's for a very long time. And even if we go just for one life, it feels very bad. The life of the animals is very, very difficult. A life without the thinking power, without, you know, it's very, very difficult. So we are warned not to take that path. And this is in general, as we heard the Upanishads, they are the initial spiritual instructions for mankind. For humans who are still in the beginning of their spiritual understanding. Therefore, there are very strong statements. In Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find other statements. Statements meant for the devotees. Statements in which Krishna will express that you may forget me, but I never forget you. You know, beautiful statements which are giving hope. But these statements are to close forever our determination to sin. They are meant to really show us the danger and close our determination for sinful life. Prabhupada also mentioned in his purport that for those who follow Ishavasya, there is a guarantee for human life in the next birth. And not just that, but for those who are already engaged in yoga, then it's a good human birth. You will study that in the chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, that they will take birth in Suchinam Srimatam Gehe, in the house of a Suchi or Srimati. Suchi means clean, Brahmana. And Srimati means rich, Vaishya. So this will be, you know, not only human life, but also in a good position. In a good position. Why in a good position? What is the advantage of taking birth in Srimati family? Right. You don't have to worry about the struggle for existence. Which means you are free to think. But That you are free to think doesn't mean you're going to think about the right thing. That's the risk. And what is the advantage of taking birth in the Suchi family? Brahminical family? Sorry? Enlightenment from the beginning and freedom from sinful life from the beginning. Because Suchis, they don't engage in sinful activities. So you start clean, like from the beginning, you are given the opportunity not to again build up bad karma, and you get the guidance, you get the knowledge. Whereas in the Srimati family, okay, you don't struggle for existence, but you may not have the knowledge. However, these two positions are like good positions in the material world, if one wants to take to spiritual life. So therefore, there is no loss, and we should be all encouraged after reading this to follow the dictations of Krishna and work for him. The conclusion is that as human beings we are meant not simply for solving economic problems on a tottering platform, but for solving all the problems of the material life into which we have been placed by the laws of nature. So this is what Prabhupada always taught us. Don't try to just solve the immediate problems, just solve the major problem, which is birth. Just plan in such a way that you will not take birth again. And whatever we have inherited from our previous karmas in this life, just bear with it. Just tolerate it. Just live with it. Further, in the Ishopanishad, this will be called make the best use of a bad bargain. What we got is not that great, but that's what we have. So make the best use of it. Okay, any more questions? Yes, Prabhu?
Okay, it's in our annual life, there is no new karmas. And they follow all the nature's law.
Yeah.
It means they don't have a free will, because with the human life, we have a free will and break the nature's law. I mean,
No, they don't have the free will. That's the speciality of human life. We have the free will. A free will in animals, the free will would be, they don't have it, and it's very limited. Like what free will, you know? You keep a dog and he escapes from the house. That was his free will. But that's not a big deal. What is meant by following the law is, for example, the animals whose body is set up to be vegetarian, like the cow, she will never eat anything else. Of course, in modern slaughterhouses, they will feed them other things in disguise, something. That's by force. It's not the choice of the cow. But by living naturally, the cow will eat grass and paper, which is made from some tree, which is also vegetal. But the monkeys, they are vegetarian. So what they don't break is the food habits, they don't break. And that's how the equilibrium is maintained on the earth, because each species has a special food. And the food of a species is sometimes another species, and that's how the balance of all the number of animals, insects, fish, and all this is maintaining on the earth. And because of the intervention of human beings, this natural balance we know presently on the planet is being broken. Like certain insects are becoming overpowering because we destroyed some species in between, and now nobody is there to eat them up. They are having now the same problems in the sea, that certain types of fish are becoming so many. It never happened before. Why? Because we destroyed one layer. So they do not encroach on the food of others, and they only eat the type of food that has been given to them by nature. Another thing that they don't encroach usually is they have a, what is called an habitat. They live in a specific place. Some animal lives in the forest, some lives in the open air, open pastures, some live in the sea, in the water. You know, it's not that the fish in the water is thinking, I had enough of living in the sea, now I would like to see how it's outside. No, they don't have this kind of freedom. But man has this freedom. He's walking on the land, he's so lucky to have two legs, but he thinks, I wonder how it looks like under the sea. And he invents all kinds of things to go under the sea. And when he is under the sea, he enjoys, it's so beautiful, it's so nice, he dies, he becomes a fish. So the habitat for animals is fixed, the food is fixed, the defense, the fearing, the defense, it's all fixed because they don't fear just anything. They fear the things which can hurt them, otherwise they don't fear. You can see in the forest certain types of animals, they live together without fear. But when the lion comes, then they are afraid. Right? And what is very fixed for animals is the mating. The animals, they mate at certain times. They have periods, once a year, or like the cows, once a year, the cows, they mate. Some is every 3 months. It's according to how long it takes for the baby to develop. So this is fixed. This is where we mean that they are bound by the laws. Because this is where we get the karma. Where is it? You know, that's why we have the four regulative principles. You know, it's about eating, four regulative principles. And it's about mating. It's there. So that's where we break the principles. We eat at any time, even though our body has been proved scientifically to be a vegetarian body. The teeth are vegetarian. The stomach acids are vegetarian. The length of the intestine is vegetarian. The nails, everything, it's vegetarian. Everything is vegetarian. We should be vegetarian. But we have free will. And because the human body is built in such a way for maximum, survival, top survival. So the human body still survives if it eats meat. It still survives. But that doesn't mean that it's correct. Correct is vegetarian because that's what the body is made for. And it's only in emergency that we can eat meat. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, even if you have to eat meat to preach, you eat meat. Yeah. But that's not a general rule. The general rule is we are vegetarian. And more than that, why we are vegetarian? Well, because we follow the Vedas to minimize the karma, and also because we are meant to offer the food to Vishnu. Vishnu accepts only things in the mode of goodness. He doesn't accept things in ignorance, like meat. He doesn't accept that. So we understand the free will. In that way, they don't have free will. Yeah, they can run from here to there. That's, yes. We will study that bit much more, the free will, in the Ishopanishad. But we have the freedom to break, like the sleep also in animals. I said it, you know. They sleep at certain time. Some of them sleep during the day, some of them sleep during the night. But it's fixed according to the species. But not in humans. So this is what they can break. Otherwise they have a little freedom to do this, that, go here, go there. But that's not freedom from the major boundaries. Yes?
What is the level of understanding of demigods?
They follow Ishavasya, the demigods. They are suras. Suras. They are called suras, no? They follow Ishavasya naturally. That's why they are demigods. By following Ishavasya, you become a demigod. Yes, there is always a chance.
So either they have free will.
Yes, of course they have free will, more than us. Yes. There is always a chance to misbehave, even in the heavenly planets. Okay, one more and we stop.
Is it necessary when a living entity falls in the evolutionary process of any core like species? So it goes all through all the species of any core?
No. 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 You can fall at any stage. Sometimes people go to the human, to the animal species for one life. Sometimes they go for 100 lives. Sometimes it depends on the heaviness of the karma. Mm-hmm. Yes. All right, so we'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow we will study mantras 4 and 5.